Greetings and welcome to another edition of Technology Bites here on 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Yes, we're glad to be here. Welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee. No.
I'm Flicted.
He's Flicted. No, Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
He's got his mic turned off.
Groovehouse.
All right. Well, welcome to the show. Barrett is still in Ireland. But as far as I know, his house is not left unattended, so don't go rob him.
You look like you should say good night and good luck.
Do I? Thanks. I was telling Dwight, I call these my mission control glasses. I feel like I'm going to be bringing the Apollo 13 in from the dark side of the moon. You know, they're going to go, the show's going to go silent for about 13 minutes or 6 minutes. How long was that?
We've got this box of parts and we need to get back online.
Exactly. No,
I don't think. Actually, I don't think Edward R. Murrow wore glasses.
No, Edward R.
He did not wear glasses.
He didn't.
No, I don't think
But I know what he's saying. He's. Yes. It's got that '60s. I like them.
Yeah,
I'm happy with them.
Nice retro.
They kind of have a retro feel. It's weird getting used to this.
Like Instagram.
Yeah, they're my Instagram glasses.
I think I took my first Instagram picture tonight.
Did you?
I haven't done anything with it yet.
Oh.
I don't know what I'm going to do. I might not even publish it.
Why not?
Well, it's not arty enough.
It's instantly arty as soon as you apply one of the effects.
Yeah, it's Instagram.
Look, you know, you as an Android user are required to flood Instagram with crappy
pictures.
You should take them as bad as
I can.
As you can, yeah. Well,
which is just what iPhone users do.
Right.
But not too bad, because then they'll become arty.
As a journalist, I hate Instagram because it doesn't capture what really is. It's like putting crayons on pictures, and when you take a picture, it should show what it is. If you want to mess with it later, go mess with it in Photoshop. But when you take it as it is.
Well, yeah, but you know, the iPhones, if you take a picture and then you edit the picture on your phone, it's edited. Like, it doesn't keep the original.
That's not true.
Where does it keep it?
It does. If you edit it in what app?
Just in the phone app.
The iPhoto? No, I think it does make a copy.
I know that all the photos that I just reloaded my Android phone because I was so sick of it just being like buggy and weird, so I reset it. And it seems to have helped, but I went through and looked at all my photos, and I found that all the photos that I had edited in different apps all look normal. They were all, you know,
They
weren't changed. So whatever the apps that I used, like now Instagram, but I was using PicPlease and a few others that would edit the photo and then upload it. But I don't think it keeps a copy of the edited photo on the phone. Hmm. It just allows you to look at the one that you've posted online. So I don't know if that's true or not, Flicted. Also, we should let our listeners know that what we're talking about, why Instagram has come up. And it's interesting to me, too, because if you're not an iPhone user, you may not know what Instagram is. I was amazed when I kind of posted my snarky comment about the. So what happened is there's.
And also, if you're not a social media user,
true enough, yes, that too. I mean, right. Except for people on Facebook didn't know what it was. So there are some pseudo social media users. But at any rate, Instagram, which I think has been around for maybe about a year, has. Exploded on the iPhone market and amongst iPhone users as a very popular social media photography app. It allows you to take a picture with your phone, apply some filters to it, makes it look like an old Polaroid, and you can post it and people can follow you. And they can look at your pictures and they'll see in their Instagram stream, like if they're reading their Facebook timeline, it's an Instagram timeline, they see the photos that people publish. Well, at any rate, this was been around for a little over a year, and Apple, it's only been on the iPhone, and I guess on the iPad, too. You could use it on the iPad. But Android didn't have it. Windows phones doesn't have it. BlackBerries obviously don't have it. So it's been this kind of thing that iPhone users have had that they, you know. And if you, all those stereotypes you think about iPhone users, if you think they're hipsters, if you think they're pretentious, it gets worse when they become Instagram users. Because they not only offend other phone users, but they offend photographers as well because everybody instantly...
And journalists.
And journalists, apparently. Right. Like, because everybody thinks, I'm a photographer now, so I'll take a picture of my food and I'll apply this effect to it, and it looks like I've taken a vintage Polaroid picture of my food and then share it with everybody, and everybody's, ooh, ah, that's such a great photo. Gets a lot of people bent out of shape, and people have very strong opinions about it. But it was in the walled garden of the iOS for so long, and then Instagram this week, I think it was this week,
right,
released a version for the Android. And so a lot of Android users said, what's Instagram? You know, they didn't care. Some Android users, like myself, were interested. I said, you know, I kind of like the app a little bit. It's an interesting app. Mm-hmm. It's fun. I shoot real photography, mm-hmm, so I feel like I've got like a leg to stand on. But I got it. But it was funny because somebody took and did one of those. What you do these things all the time where you get all the tweets about a subject and you put
Storify.
It, Storify. Somebody right. took and Storified all the responses on Twitter to Android getting Instagram. And these ridiculous people, you know, like, oh my God, I can't believe that Android has. I don't want to see what these losers have, take pictures of. Don't follow me on Instagram if you're an Android user because you suck. And one guy actually said, the best tweet I saw was this guy who said, he says, Instagram for the Android, I don't want to see pictures of what poor people like.
What? Peter's querying me by text message saying,
what the hell?
Internet problems in the studio tonight?
Yes.
Ah.
Yes would be the answer.
Well, if you want to,
yeah,
I've got...
Yeah, and I even wired in and it's not working.
You want to connect
you require,
to the...
Yours requires a WPA2 password. I already tried it.
Oh, this one?
Yeah.
Oh, and you can't do WPA2?
Sure.
On
but he doesn't know the password.
All right, well, here, I'll give it to you.
Just tell it out loud.
Yo.
Who's going to connect?
No better than that.
Is it a password you use for other stuff? Or is it the machine password?
I just am... conscientious that
Dwight is just so uncooperative sometimes.
I'm walking over here.
Shut up already. All right.
This big boy.
All right. So I'll continue telling the Instagram story, I guess. But at any rate, so a lot of the Apple Android, the Apple Instagram users are very verbal about how much they don't like the fact that Android users now have Instagram. And so the backlash on that is that the Android Instagram users now want to... You know, people are going out and getting the program just to piss off the Apple users. So that's why I was telling Groovehouse that he needs to take as many just crappy photos as he possibly can and flood Instagram with them and tag them all Android so they show up in people's streams. I mean, it's just... It's ridiculous because just like any other social media thing, it doesn't matter. You know, if it was that way... if that mentality held true, then it'd be like, I don't really like 13-year-old goths having Twitter accounts. You don't have to follow them. You don't have to pay attention to it. They're just out there. It's just noise. You don't have to actually let these people follow you. Or I guess, can you? I don't know if you can block people on Instagram, though. No, no?
I don't know.
But anyway,
I don't use it.
So as a journalist, though, you say you don't like Instagram.
Yeah, it's just
because
not,
you want a photo of something as it is.
I think now you can take just a regular photo with Instagram. You can do that. But people tend not to do that.
But the things that people tend to take photos of with their phone are not terribly interesting. What people think is happening is that they take a picture of their salad that they're having for lunch and they apply an Instagram effect and then it becomes an artsy picture of their salad.
When you're hungry, your salad is really interesting.
But if you're just trying to share that with your friends, you know, if you're making it look like a...
It always looks better when, you know, it's kind of like a bar at 2 a.m., you know. Things look better than they actually are because you're hungry.
I haven't been in a bar at 2 o'clock in the morning in a while. Maybe you can tell me all about that.
I'm working from memory here. Distant memory. So,
but this coming Friday, you'll get to re-experience
that's
it.
That's right, yes. Because Dwight's on his own.
That's right. We're at the Geek Gathering this
weekend. Right, the Geek Gathering is this Friday.
Yeah.
And we, I got no internet either. My internet's down. Let me see what your hash code is.
So we're
full up.
You're full up.
I'm not getting anything from yours either.
You're not getting anything from mine?
Let me go. Y'all talk to the audience.
All right. So what some of us are connected to, I've got a Nokia Lumia 900, which Nokia just released. yesterday, or announced, unveiled yesterday, the reviews embargo is up. It'll go on sale Sunday. It's Nokia's flagship Windows phone, and it's the device that Microsoft is hoping will breathe life into Windows Phone, which has not really taken off like they'd hoped. And it's got a hotspot feature.
How many hotspots does it let you share?
Four.
Really?
Yeah.
I've got four. You've got your laptop. How many of those four devices are yours?
let's see. This, my notebook computer, my iPad, which I'm...
You're running three of your own devices.
Three of my own devices and Pete. But he's not able to connect to it.
All right.
See if you can connect, and we'll try it.
Okay. Now I'm connecting. Now I'm going to try connecting to the KPFT 2.4, and that works.
Yeah, KPFT 2.4 works.
It asks for a password.
I can tell you what it is.
Oh, okay.
Hold on.
Oh, just say it. It's not like
it was.
Yeah, they have added an additional router into the station. Our KPFT router that we've used for years has just really gone downhill of late. And so they have added a new one and put 2.4 on it. And supposedly there's a 5 gigahertz
version, but we've not seen it yet. All right, so I think that we have got Flicted getting connected now to... I was about to fire up the hotspot on my iPad.
It could be that this isn't reaching into the studio. That's possible.
All right, so...
I was connected to it. I just couldn't get anything.
I got some kind of internet.
Got some kind of internet?
Yeah.
Awesome. You can play solitaire now
online. I'm not going to play solitaire.
All right, let me, while we're waiting for this to all happen, you can visit us online at geekradio.com. That is the official website of Technology Bytes. You can also hang out with us IRC. We are on the server irc.cuckoo.com in the channel Tech Bytes. If you don't have your own IRC client, you can always go to the website. We have a Java version of IRC loaded on the webpage that you can use and connect straight up. It's real easy. So go to geekradio.com and you can join the IRC that way if you like. Phone number, which we'll be using a little bit later to take phone calls from you, the listener, 713-526-5738. And that's where you can dial in to be on the air. What we're hoping to have happen here is get our internet working. And it sounds like I just heard something pipe in. I hear that crosstalk coming over from the other channel again. So
there's a crossed wire somewhere.
So we get Peter on. We'll do our Technology Bytes info shot, and he will present to you the news.
Have we given all the vitals?
I just did that.
Did you now?
I did.
Have we hyped the Geek Gathering hard enough?
Well, we're going to hype that a little bit more. But the Geek Gathering, which is our monthly meetup. It's funny that people, you know, I sent out pretty much the same invite, and the webpage has the same text. And I always say, you don't have to be a geek to attend. People, I think, are worried that they may not be geeky enough to come to the Geek Gathering. And if you're geeky, to be geeky enough to be the Geek Gathering, all you have to be is someone who enjoys just talking to strangers. That's as geeky as it gets. I mean, you could...
Well, or to put it another way...
Yeah, another way. Hello, Pete.
To put it another way, if you think that you're so geeky that you would be judged adversely by geeks,
then you're geeky
enough to be at the Geek Gathering.
Because that's meta right there. So then once you're meta, then that's geeky enough. All right. Hey, Pete, glad we could get you on the air with us here.
Awesome. Yeah, I don't know what the deal was.
I think a lot of it had to do with our spotty internet here.
Ah.
We had to get that all sorted out. So now that we have it sorted out, we're pretty much done with all of our intros and stuff. So we're going to hand it off to San Antonio with a Technology Bytes Info Shot. Take it away, Info Shot.
It's the Technology Bytes Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
All right. Well, last week I mentioned that they were starting to sell online versions of, you know, the Harry Potter books. Well, so just for grins, I thought I would check in and see how the sales were going. apparently in the first 3 days online, $1.5 million worth of electronic Harry Potter books were sold by their store, which was more than what they expected to sell. If you kind of figure out an average price for each book of around $9.13, that comes to 164,000 books in a few days. So even so, apparently, this, even after the now, you know, obviously there was the big burst at first. Now a week later, they're still running at a much higher rate than anticipated. Although fortunately, it sounds like it has not crashed them. In other kind of changes, you know, the, obviously the electronic distribution of the Harry Potter books is an interesting one. Another big change is they're talking, you know, the Olympics are coming up. The 2012 Olympics this summer, and the BBC is running it, and they're going to be they're being creative about how they do it, and this is going to be different, I think, than any other Olympics up to now. They're going to broadcast over 2,500 hours of live sports on 24 channels that viewers can watch pretty much anywhere. Director Roger Mosey indicates it started out as a way to watch all 24 streams on the BBC Sport website via PCs or mobile devices, but has been expanded to offer the streams through television operators as well. So far, Sky and Freesat are confirmed in, while Freeview users can punch up two extra channels on their system. On this side of the Atlantic, the most recent news is that NBC Sports Network will be right alongside the broadcast NBC channel, which has its own streaming plans in combination with YouTube, with a, quote, record amount of Olympic coverage. It could air as many as 300 hours of content from London, as well as some of the Olympic trials. So, obviously, you have until, let's see, July 27th to figure out how to access the BBC stuff and, you know, make your computer look like you're watching from England so that they won't block you if you're that into the Olympics. In bad news, you know, those who have been perhaps smug about their Macs not having viruses, there seem to be more Mac focused things happening. Doesn't mean to, you know, don't rush around in a panic or any of that, but it certainly is moving up on where you may want to start thinking about antivirus for your computer, or at the very least, paying attention to what sites you go to and keeping your software up to date. Dr. Webb, a Russian antivirus company, Dr. Webb, has found a botnet it's using what's called the Flashback Trojan, that has reportedly infected more than 500,000 Macs around the globe. When they first announced it, they claimed 550,000 infected Macs. Later in the day, they updated it to say that the count had gone up to 600,000, with 274 bots even checking in from Cupertino, California, where Apple's headquarters are. Ars Technica has covered the Mac Flashback Trojan since 2011, but the most recent variant from earlier this week targeted an unpatched Java vulnerability within Mac OS X. It was unpatched at the time by Apple. Oracle had released a fix for the vulnerability in February, but Apple didn't send out a fix until earlier this week when the news started to spread about the Flashback variant. According to Dr. Webb, 57% of the infected Macs are located in the U.S. and 20% are in Canada. Like older versions of the malware, the latest Flashback variant searches an infected Mac for a number of antivirus applications before generating a list of botnet control servers and beginning the process of checking in with them. Now that the fix for the Java vulnerability is out, however, there's no excuse not to update. The malware installs itself after you visit a compromised or malicious web page, so if you're on the internet at all, you're potentially at risk, unless you go and, you know, do the patch that's the new one that's out there. If you think one of your machines may be infected, you can go to F-Secure, that's www.f-secure.com, and you want to look up the Trojan Downloader, Flashback Trojan Downloader stuff, and they will tell you, you basically, you just have to copy and paste some commands from the from their webpage into the terminal window on your Mac, and it'll tell you if you are infected or not. I'm happily clean. I'm fresh and clean. But, you know, you may want to check. Of course, 500,000 sounds like a big number, but there's a lot more than that many Macs in the world. So most people are probably not, don't have it, but it never hurts to check. Nobody wants to find out they're part of a botnet. Just staying with Apple, apparently more and more places are issuing Macs to workers at companies, which that used to be super rare. Apparently up to 46% of corporations are now giving Macs to workers, according to a Forrester report cited by CIO Journal. This is a growth of roughly half within the space of 2 years. Forrester analyst Frank Gillette credits the shift to, obviously, the tablet, iPhone, and iPad devices. Use of iPads and iPhones in the workplace is creating increased awareness and consideration of Macs, he says. The same time, you know, so, yeah, like 50% growth. You know, the best way to have, like, giant growth is if you originally had a pretty small pretty much a small market in the first place. So to turn it into something that gives you more perspective, the Macs represent just 7% of the computers given to workers. One exception is Cisco. Their CIO tells CIO Journal that about 25% of the company's almost 64,000 workers use Macs. So, you know, the iPhone and iPad have been getting them into here's the irony. The iPhone and the iPad, two extremely consumer-focused devices, are the ones that are getting Apple into the corporate world. The company continues to provide little formal support, lacking even an internal enterprise division. It's gradually introduced enterprise-friendly features to iOS and offers some help in the form of things like consultation and retail business specialists. But like we've mentioned before, you know, Apple really doesn't have – they don't have any kind of large-scale servers. Their server software actually is – if you're on OS X Lion, is like $50. And you put it on whatever machine you want. They don't sell some sort of big rack mount type series. You know, put it in with the other servers. You know, you can go get a Mac Mini, which looks really funny when you put it next to, you know, some kind of hot swappable power supply Dell server or something. But they do on the Mac servers. I've managed some Office installations that run off Mac servers, and they have. For the iOS type devices, they do have a profile manager that'll let you do some things to kind of preset up. It'll let you kind of preset up desktops and iPads and stuff like that you hook up to it. So that's kind of cool. But Apple certainly is not thinking in terms of the corporate world. And then the final kind of Apple thingy. This one, you know, this rumor comes from a parking lot attendant to tell us when the iPhone 5 will come out. Now, does that sound absurd? Well, first off, I'll say what her answer is. She says the iPhone is coming out in June, according to the Chinese lady in a remote booth. A Tokyo TV crew basically accosted the woman who's stationed outside Foxconn's factory and asked about iPhone rumors. She stated from inside her small parking lot chamber that the iPhone 5 is being constructed in time for June. You know, you think about it, in a lot of ways, she has more grounds to know what the rumors are or to have some good information than a whole lot of people that we report a lot more credibly or grant a lot more credibility. I don't know. I'm almost willing to bet on the parking lot attendant because she's in a place where she could know it. Let's see and then I just closed the tab that I wanted to look at next. Oh, here it is. This one's interesting. And why I didn't want to reporting it. You know you're doing well when somebody makes a version of whatever your thing is for something else. And there's a publishing consortium that wants to launch Hulu for magazines. So Next Issue Media was announced a couple years ago, but the subscription swapping all-you-can-read digital newsstand is set to launch tomorrow. Essentially, it's a digital subscription service proposed by five of the world's largest publishers. That's for those of you keeping track. I don't know, aren't these the five last publishers? Anyways, it's Condé Nast, Time, Hearst, Meredith, News Corp.
Oh, there you go. Okay, you just, after you said News Corp, you cut out.
It's a conspiracy.
You made that disparaging remark about the last publisher, so.
Actually, it's probably Hearst that got you.
Dwight has a special button.
A button.
He is a running dog lackey for the Hearst Corporation.
Every time I cut off somebody who disses Hearst, I get a bonus, so.
He gets a free.
I get a free subscription.
All right, so continue.
And your iPhone says, "Thank you." It's us. Thank you. So let's see. After News Corp, that's the publisher's internet. Users would get as many digital magazines as they wished for $10 to $15 a month, depending on if you also wanted like weeklies, like Yorker. And just like Hulu, you'd be able to pick freely and choose which content to consume. The digital magazines will still read like physical magazines, top to bottom, left to right, including ads, which is kind of odd, but likely a necessary step for publishers to make the leap to accepting digital publishing. I guess that way they can say, you know, they had so many page views plus the number of issues that went out. At launch, 35 titles will be available, including Motor Trend, Popular Mechanics, and Time. More titles are expected to debut in the coming weeks. Basically, you download the Next Issue Media Reader once, and all the magazines will be presented there in a single format. Let's see. However, if the Big Five is counting on this production immediately taking off, that may not be likely. It requires an app to run, an app that right now is only available on Android tablets running Honeycomb. And so the odd thing is that nobody thought to port this thing, much less build it specifically for the iPad, and the Retina display is not a brilliant way to show that you are really on top of this whole direct digital publishing thingy. Because Honeycomb, Android tablets running Honeycomb is not, I don't think they're in any danger of being a major portion of the tablet world right now today. So, but at least they're trying. I mean, Hulu started off a little slow, and now they've gotten to somewhere where they have some heft. Now the new stuff, kind of big, more amorphous new stuff. It's not like nobody announced like some cool new computer or phone. Well, there is a Windows phone, but it just didn't. Nothing seemed that compelling about the articles on it, so you can look that one up yourself. This one's just an interesting, different idea. Wind blows stronger and more consistently as you rise above ground obstacles like buildings, trees, and hills, which means you could have a great green energy source if you can lift up the generators to about 1,000 feet in the air. So a company has come up with a way to, or they're developing the Airborne Wind Turbine, AWT, which is basically like a big blimp, except it's in a cylinder around a central set of blades. The shape ensures that it always faces the wind, and it's anchored to the ground via an electrically conductive tether. Since it doesn't have propellers or mechanical processes to stay aloft, it can stay in the air a lot longer and at a greatly reduced cost. They've already successfully tested a 35-foot scale prototype in Limestone, Maine, in which it autonomously climbed to 350 feet. Using its Southwest Skystream turbine, it produced twice as much power at altitude as it did at ground level, and then it landed. Of course, they want to scale up to be at 1,000 feet, where wind speeds are 5 times faster on the ground and can generate over 20 times the power. Just for you math geeks at home, each time wind speed doubles, the amount of energy you theoretically can generate increases by 8 times. If it works, Alteros is a company that's doing this, believes it can cut the cost of energy production by 65%. Of course, I want one of those. The only problem is this relies on helium, which is becoming scarce. And there's a whole nother story about why helium is scarce, and it's a sad and stupid story. But I guess I would say stop buying helium balloons, because I think I'd rather see these blimps than a bunch of people huffing helium at a birthday party. And finally, just in case reality ain't good enough for you by itself, Google has released their employees, some of them, will be out and about. Obviously, I don't think they're going to be hanging around. Oh, they're not going to be hanging around where I am in El Paso this week, or probably not much in Houston. But if you see somebody wandering around with a pair of futuristic glasses that look like a prop from Star Trek, it's probably just a Google employee testing the company's new augmented reality glasses. On Wednesday, they showed pictures of its secret initiative called Project Glass. The glasses are the company's first venture into wearable computing. They're not for sale, but they will be testing them in public. In a post shared on Google Plus, employees in the company's lab, known as Google X, asked people for input about the prototype of Project Glass. The people who wrote this, and the information goes to the people who are responsible for the software component and the location-based aspects of the glasses. Steve Lee is a Google product manager, and he originally worked on Google's mapping software, Latitude, mobile maps, and indoor maps. So he's kind of into the mapping thing. He says, quote, "We're sharing this information now because we want to start a conversation and learn from your valuable input." Plus, they're going to talk about using them. The prototype looked like a very polished and well-designed pair of wraparound glasses with a clear display that sits above the eye. The glasses can stream information to the lenses and allow the wearer to receive messages through voice commands. It has a built-in camera to record video and take pictures. The New York Times first wrote about them in late February, describing an augmented reality display that would sit over the eye and run on Android. Google has a video that's sort of futuristic-y. One place said that this completes their transformation into Microsoft by having fantastical videos about what they're going to do. In other cool stuff, Project Glass could hypothetically become Project Contact Lens. One of the main people in this specializes in bio-nanotechnology, which is a fusion of tiny technologies and biology, who recently built a tiny contact lens that has embedded electronics and can display pixels to a person's eye. I think by that description in the article, you can get that this is not like it's going to give you it's not going to give you like panoramic the equivalent of IMAX. This one will be interesting. We'll keep an eye on it. It's kind of a cool project to see wearable computing move from where you look like a Borg to where you look like a douche. Instead of looking like a Borg, you look like somebody who's wearing some new Oakley sunglasses that are so hip that they don't actually shade your eyes. And that's the news.
All right. Did you get that out of your system, Pete?
Get what?
That little Tourette's moment you had there at the end.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I can electronically stutter now.
Yeah. All right, well, we're going to get right into the phone calls. It looks like we have somebody calling in all the way from San Francisco.
We do.
Grievous, who do we have?
All right, first on the show, we are going to take William.
William, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hi, Mr. Lee. This is William Blake calling from calling from San Francisco. I'm somewhat of an older guy. I remember the glory days of Windows 2000. And
those were hardly glory days.
Gosh, you're old.
You're at least 10 years old.
I'm very I often want and wish for myself to have a smartphone. I have not yet. I mean, I refuse to buy an Apple product again for a lot of reasons. I used Apples in the mid 80s, early 80s, and then later on I bought a beautiful, I mean, nothing was more gorgeous than my they weren't called MacBook Pros back then. They were called anyway, this was last decade, and I see that they have a time bomb built into all Apple products. That way you buy.
How do you figure?
Well, because I proved the hardware was perfect, but yet when I tried to load the iOS, when I tried to load OS X on it, it refused to accept the graphics. And I think VRAM is the name that Apple uses for their graphics hardware.
What was the computer you tried to load OS X on?
Oh, yeah. OS X's been around since what? XP? Or even before? It was a PowerBook. It was a beautiful 12-inch, I believe. 12-inch PowerBook. Fantastic machine. Elegant in operating system.
And what version of the OS were you trying? What version of OS X were you trying to put on it?
10.4 was the last one you were allowed to put on that machine. Yeah.
And you're saying that when you loaded that up, it
that's because they eliminated the PowerPC, I think, at that point. Is that what the deal was? That the
well,
was
it was
the processor
it was original
supported?
It was original discs, so I wasn't trying to upgrade or anything like that. I just remember at a certain point I could run Linux on it. I could actually load all kinds of crazy stuff on the machine, the hardware, but Apple decided that I need to go ahead and buy a new Apple product. That wasn't the original reason I called.
All right.
But this is very interesting. Go ahead.
Well, I don't think that Apple decided anything. I think that you may have been, you know, pushing the limits of what that hardware was capable of doing when you tried
by loading the original operating system.
The original operating system. You're saying you were loading the original operating system that came with the computer.
Oh, exactly. That's my point.
Well, there's no time bomb that's going to cause a computer to reject the operating system it was designed to run on. Hardware will fail.
Do it. If they knew how to do that with any kind of accuracy, every major manufacturer would figure out how to do it.
I just wanted to take issue with that because there's
This is good because I've never had anybody be able to argue with me on this, and this is good. I like you guys' point of view. Go ahead.
If you're loading the original operating system and it doesn't load, that's not because there's some time bomb. It's because there's some defect. There's some problem with the hardware.
No, it told me exactly what the defect was, Dwight. It told me that it was the VRAM. That is the
okay.
Graphics.
Well, if the RAM has gone bad, whether it's
the it's not the RAM. It's the graphics. You
if the graphics card
Apple
goes bad, it goes
VRAM.
Bad.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, if the graphics memory went bad, or if it didn't see that if it wasn't addressing the graphics card the way it should, it could indicate that there was just a hardware issue.
Sure.
VRAM
is a measure of the amount of memory for the graphics card. It's kind of like the RAM for the computer is the amount of memory to run programs. The VRAM is the amount of memory available to the graphics
card. Is that Barrett talking?
That's Peter. That's Peter in San Antonio. But there's not code built into the hardware that says, you know what, you've had your computer X number of hours. And
well, let's sell advertising. That is my what do you call it? A theory? A conspiracy theory? Yeah, that's my conspiracy theory because I proved that the graphics and every part of the hardware was correct in any other OS I loaded on that same hardware. That's why I find it, but that's not why I called. This is actually more interesting than the reason I originally called.
Well, that's going to be very disappointing to our listeners if the conversation takes a turn for the more boring.
No. This is much better. I'm glad because all of you, as far as I can tell, and I respect you guys. I mean, you've been doing this a long time, as I have tried to do. You all disagree, and you think that there's something I'm missing, so I'm going to go back and look at that. But I have been over and over this situation with the same hardware for now coming on almost 3 years. It's not quite 3 years, but
all right. Well, I just want to say that, you know, I totally believe that you're having this problem.
I can run Linux, and I can load Apple starting out, and it looks perfect.
Is there a possibility? Is it even remotely possible that your install media has a problem?
Sure, the disk
you're loading from has a corruption on it or a defect on the disk that is causing the operating system not to load properly.
Very nice, very nice.
I mean, that would seem to me to be more likely.
We checked on that. I went ahead and got Apple to send me a brand new, I don't think it's an ISO, but it's another
image.
Yeah, it's very nice. And it brought the same exact error to my hardware. And I found that to be, that's a time bomb. Apple wants me to buy another set of,
I will just say that I don't believe that to be true.
Beyond that,
I would not know how that they could make it true. I mean, even let's concede that Apple and every other computer manufacturer on the planet would like to have the ability to do it. I'm not quite sure how they would accomplish
get away with it. I keep my Windows hardware alive for many, many more years in this Apple product.
Well, we're just having this conversation, Dwight and I, this week. His iMac is,
coming up on five years old.
My iMac is about three years old. These are the first computers I've had, and it's not necessarily because they're Mac. I don't think it's because they're Mac, but I think the technology has progressed to a point now where the hardware is satisfactory for a longer period of time. There was so much growth and everything was happening so fast with new hardware coming out, faster processors, more RAM, more hard drive, that needing to upgrade seemed a little bit more urgent in the past than it does now. So I won't
disagree with you that even my old machine that gives the one I'm complaining about is some of the nicest hardware I've ever owned. There's no doubt about it. Jay, there's no doubt about that. I'm curious to know how they would do it.
I mean, if
come on, are you telling me you don't know anybody who could code that?
Let me go a step farther, William. Why is Apple making this hardware that has a time bomb in it only for you?
Oh, you're right.
Maybe there's just not that many people with that old of a MacBook that they're trying to reinstall. But it seems to me that would have come up in conversation. You know, I was reloading my Mac and I was getting this VRAM error, and we figured out that it was a time bomb.
Most of my Mac friends and many of them are techies to some degree or another. Most of my Mac friends are not the kind of person who would keep a Mac that long. And also, they're not the kind of person that would bother with this problem. So I don't really have research in that area, Jay. I just don't. And I think that, that's why I called. I didn't actually call about this problem.
We can certainly address the other problem that you're having, but,
this is good. This is good conversation. I'm going to go ahead and go with you guys on this one.
It still doesn't solve your problem because the computer still won't let you reload the original OS. So you're still left with the same problem, diagnosed correctly or not.
Don't worry about that. The reason I really called is I wanted to hear from guys your age. And also, I'm a lot older than you, Jay, and I'm a lot younger than Dwight Silverman. Figure that one out. All right.
How old do you think I am?
I'm a lot younger than Dwight. So
how old do you think I am?
Dwight is such. Oh my gosh! Are you in junior high yet?
I've got a diploma. Are you hitting on Dwight?
I've got a diploma.
I am hitting on Dwight, and I've done it before. I consider Dwight a. I wouldn't think he was my friend. I don't do Facebook, by the way. That's how old I am. I will not touch that whole thing. I do tweet.
So you're on MySpace.
Time to
time. Or cut.
Are you Leo Laporte's intern?
I'm working. I've got Dwight has a very happy family, as far as I know. And I've got them on the other line.
That's me.
And they're like, please don't say anything bad. Okay.
That's not my family.
I'm sorry, that's what me. Was that?
That's not Dwight's family. If they were on the other line, they'd be
his family. I got the wrong...
Wrong number.
Oh, wait, that's your California family, Dwight.
What are you still not the same
other, right, your whole other set of beautiful women and children, right?
That's all right, terrible. So regardless. Yeah.
Okay.
So if you're a middle-aged guy like I am, and you remember at the top of the call, I mentioned the glory years of Windows 2000, you know, and how dry and how that came out and helped us all understand. Well, it helped me, I remember, understand networking and how to work AD, Active Directory for the users or the listeners. Tell me your opinion, then I'll get off the phone because you have lots of callers.
You're going to stay while we answer this one.
Go ahead. I want to hear Dwight. I want to hear Barry.
Well, what's the actual question? What's the actual question?
The question would be, how do you deal with such a great amount of mobile devices? And you know, as I said, I have refused to pay an extra $100 a month for data on my mobile. I still use what junior high kids use. I still use a feature phone. I do not own a smartphone. I've never owned a smartphone, and I refuse to buy an iPhone. But I know that all you guys are basically over there using Macs, and you now have a Nokia 900, Dwight, that you brought to the studio. You know, this is much different than Windows 2000. How does a guy, go ahead, I know you're laughing at me, how does a guy figure out how to move smoothly and carefully without spending another $100 a month? I really don't need that every month.
Well,
I think,
you know, to be fair, Dwight has a lot of technology because that's what he does for a living. He's kind of in a position where, and I don't mean to answer the question for you, Dwight, but I will. He's required because of his job to have this. It also helps that he's very interested in having all of this as well. So it dovetails nicely together. But in terms of determining, I think what he uses day to day stays pretty simple. And I think the key to that is determining what you need to do. What is it that you have to accomplish at the end of the day?
I'm in a good position because I get to try a lot of stuff, and then the stuff that I like and that I think is the best is what I end up using. But I have all, and I think probably all of us are like this, is that we're fascinated by the gadgetry, but we're also fascinated by what it's doing to our society and by what is the changes
that's wrong. Tell me all about Siri.
Okay.
Yeah, that old joke. Right.
No, but, talking about is, and excuse me, I've got a...
You're getting all choked up talking
old.
To us.
Getting really old.
Dwight's old.
You know, at this point, I could not live without a smartphone. My life has kind of moved so that what I want to know...
Do you use the iPhone?
Yes, all the time,
okay.
Constantly.
That's fine. Go ahead.
I use it... I'm having a hard time talking.
All right. Maybe it was a good thing that I answered this for you. So
I use it, for example, if I need to find a place in Houston, which is huge and you know, it's the largest...
Like Los Angeles.
Like Los Angeles.
Right?
You know, you try to find something anywhere. I use my iPhone. I can stay in instant communication with my lovely family.
I have the wrong number on the phone.
Yes, and I know that they're not, that they like saying bad things about me. So, you know, I know where they are most of the time. I know where my kids are because of my smartphone. So it makes my life better, and it's pleasurable to use. It's worth paying that amount of money. If you don't have the money and you don't have the smartphone, then, you know, it's moot for you. If you have the money and you're using it, not using it just on principle, you may be missing out on a lot if you don't give it a try.
Now, would you say the same thing about social networking like Facebook because I refuse to use Facebook. On the other hand, I may end up buying a smartphone, but I probably will still not be on Facebook.
Well, Facebook, you know, what I tell people who are resistant to Facebook is that if your friends, the people who you deal with all the time, are using Facebook in the way a lot of people do, that they use it to arrange meetings, to stay in touch with people who are distant, to share photos, to share news,
to waste time,
right.
You know, a lot of people.
I have a website for that. And go ahead.
But
I'm
Facebook.
Old, huh?
Facebook
I'm
has
old.
Become kind of.
I
sound like you're just a curmudgeon.
So
I don't know that you're necessarily old. I think you're just a curmudgeon. And
not
I think
a curmudgeon. That's correct, Mr. Lee.
William, let me finish my scenario here.
Okay.
If you find yourself in that position where people are constantly coming to you saying, "Are you on Facebook? I can send you this photo." And you're resisting it just for the principle of it. Again, you may be missing out on kind of a new form of, I call it digital intimacy, between people who are your friends and your family. And it does, you know, it's not going to hurt you to do that if you do it. It doesn't cost you anything. It's free. And yes,
you may have a website,
but that website is not part of the network that is Facebook. A network has value.
You don't have to publish any personal data to your Facebook. The Facebook could just be a landing site where people can drop by, post a photo to share with you, and you'll get an email notification that somebody posted this photo, and then you could go look at it. Or somebody, since, you know, you don't have to have a Facebook presence that's all encompassing or detailed about you. You don't have to have a Facebook account at all to justify having a smartphone. This is what it boils down to. You have to determine what your needs are in this age. Do you need to have a phone that can give you directions? Do you need to have a phone that can give you access to your email?
No.
Do you need to have a phone that can access the internet?
I used the BlackBerry in the 90s. What do you think of that?
What I'm asking you right now, William, and I appreciate how clever you are.
I'm not trying to be clever. No. I think you guys actually are on top of it, and I am a curmudgeon. I'm actually being an unfriendly, mean man right now, but I really... I did not have
much of a need for a smartphone in the first, I guess, 10 years of doing this show. I resisted smartphones.
I heard the way you said "show." That was funny.
I didn't want to pay for a data plan. I thought, you know, $80 a month for a phone was ridiculous.
It's ridiculous, exactly.
And in some ways, it still kind of is. And where we're coming to right now is a point where, you know, access to the internet is a lot more commonplace just in terms of being able to jump on the Wi-Fi or something. I have a small, easy-to-carry laptop. I do most of my internet access from this laptop, so I might take it to a coffee shop, or I might take it to a restaurant, or I'll take it to work, or I'll take it wherever.
And that brings me to another point that I hope you're coming to, Jay, is that if I'm wanting to be with actual live people, the last thing I want to do is be rude and go, "Hold on, I got to take this call," or "Hold on, I'm looking up my..."
Let me point out what we're going to have to take take a short break here, wrap this up here.
Okay.
But let me just say this. That's a good point. The phone will turn off. It does have an on-off switch.
So, yes, it does.
So if you're worried about being rude, or if you're worried about, you know, cutting people off or that you're talking to in real life, you could turn your phone off. You just have to determine whether you need it or not. If you don't need it, don't get it.
Didn't mean to hijack the show.
That's all right.
I really love the feedback.
My wife has one of those phones like that, and all it does is it makes phone calls, and she prepays it for the month.
That's how I work mine.
It works great for her. All right. Well, listen, we got to go. Thanks for your call, William.
Thank you very much, gentlemen, and I'll be listening to the rest of the show.
All right. Thank you, William.
You got it. Bye-bye.
That was actually relatively entertaining.
We need to put together a care package with a manual typewriter and two cans with stringing between them, stat.
For him, yeah.
Well, it sounds to me like he's kind of like, I'm not I'm not gay, but I am curious.
Hey-o.
You know, I don't want a smartphone, but I want to be talked into it. I want to be convinced by a conniving stranger.
I've got about two or three people who regularly comment on my blog who sound like him. And I call them neo-Luddites. They actually have some technical savvy, but they are they're Luddites basically.
Well, they're people that just disagree to disagree. But anyway, listen, we got to take a short break here. We'll be right back after some station business. You're listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Dwight.
And he's
Groovehouse.
Be right back.
The Healthcare Movie provides the real story of how the healthcare systems in Canada and the United States evolved to be so completely different when at one point they were essentially the same. Most people under the age of 50 in both countries are not aware of the intensity of the political struggle that led to the universal medical care system in Canada. Nor are they aware of the public relations campaigns that have been prevalent in the United States since the early 1900s to dissuade the public from supporting national healthcare. Join Healthcare for All Texas for a screening of The Healthcare Movie on Sunday, April 12th at 6 p.m. at the University of Houston Clear Lake Bayou Building, room 1335. The Healthcare Movie reveals the personal and emotional impact on Canadians. It also reveals the continuing struggle in the United States between the fear of government intervention and the right to quality health care for all people. This is KPFT Houston.
Explore a world of entertainment Friday and Saturday, April 21st, 22nd, 28th, and 29th at the Houston International Festival Spotlight in Argentina. KPFT is proud to sponsor an amazing schedule of great music on the Bud Light World Music Stage with local favorites and international superstars. This year's lineup includes Grammy Award winners Los Lonely Boys, the multicultural, multi-platinum recording group War, the legendary British reggae band Still Pulse, New Orleans funk conglomerate Galactic, and much more. Get discounted early tickets online at ifest.org and come downtown to the Houston International Festival, supported by KPFT 90.1 FM, Houston.
All right, and we're back. Well, just, you know, just still thinking about the William phone call. I think he just wanted to be talked into getting on Facebook and using a smartphone.
Well, he sounds like he does have a lot of people coming at him going,
why aren't you on Facebook?
And I think that if you have enough people doing that who want to share things with you, it may be worth considering.
Well, plus, honestly, his name is common enough that he can fly under the radar a lot easier than some people.
Right. Well, you know,
even if he uses his real name, which some people don't do, you're not supposed to, but a lot of people don't use their real name.
Yeah. Well, you know, like I said, you don't have to publish anything revealed. You don't even have to publish an actual photo of yourself.
You could just lurk.
Yeah. I mean, I think, I do think, though, however, that trying to get somebody to use Facebook in that capacity doesn't really work well, because unless you're willing.
They don't get much out of it.
Yeah, well, and it's hard to actually, like. You know, nothing more frustrating than, did you see that message I posted to you on Facebook? No, I haven't looked at my Facebook in months or whatever. So unless you're actively engaging, it may not be a good way of sharing that digital intimacy. I want Dwight to tell us more about digital intimacy.
That's just something I invented just then, so I'm not sure I can tell you much about it yet.
You just said, but you like to call. Something I like to call.
I do. I like to call it.
Just now I made it up. Just now I love to call it that.
But I may...
He's going to talk about it a lot more when he gets his augmented reality glasses.
I think that there's a certain kind of... when you're interacting with somebody online... and I think everybody has done this, like when you're involved in a chat or even going back and forth on Twitter.
And a cyber.
You feel... It's like cyber. It's like cyber, but it's...
Really?
It's more intellectual.
How is it like cyber?
It's more intellectual. You're kind of into it. And it's intimate. It's an intimate thing.
Well, there is a sense that you're like right there face-to-face talking a conventional tone.
Except you're face-to-face... talking to somebody, except they talk like this. I don't believe what you're saying. yeah, that's totally right. And you're like, are you being sarcastic? Are you serious?
That's, see, that's real intimacy, isn't it? That's like with your girlfriend, right? Yeah, I know.
All right, 713-526-5.
Gotta wipe these things down.
Oh, I
he's been a little too intimate on.
He got a little too intimate with his iPad.
With his iPad.
Let me see. I gotta turn my volume down here. Let me see. I gotta see if I could play. I gotta let this cue up here and play this thing for you. It's actually quite humorous. All right, let's take a phone call. Groove House.
Yes.
Who do we have up next?
All right, up next we're gonna take Tyra.
Tyra, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hi, guys. Well, it's an interesting show so far, and I love the term digital intimacy that you've just coined. I think that's going to go viral. I'm one of
that's one of the things that happens
that's
with
that's
digital
what you
intimacy.
Watch out for.
That's dangerous.
Yeah, so to speak. I just, you know, I mean, this is not why I called, but talking about that, like, I started reading Twitter because I had a friend who was doing Twitter. And the stuff people write on their Twitter accounts, I mean, it was blowing my mind. It was beyond intimacy. It was definitely going in the soap opera, Peyton plays, maybe even soft porn direction. And I was just amazed. So,
well, there's a lot of double entendre. I don't know that I agree with the soft porn necessarily.
It depends
but
on
maybe
the
I'm reading the
follow.
Wrong Twitter feed.
I was going to say, I know a couple of people who follow people, I think, based on their avatars. And I'm pretty sure, yeah, there's probably some pretty crazy stuff going on in some of their feeds.
And the whole dating thing, you know, like they're talking to one person about, you know, hooking up, and then they're talking to somebody else. And so, like, all the different people they're dating seem to know. And that was a part of it that blew my mind. But but my actual call was more along the lines of William before. I was more actively engaged with technology, you know, when I worked at Texas Instruments back in the 90s, and for corporations helping them, you know, buy their $50 or $60 million worth of Dell computers and not Apples. And I'm trying to now myself get up to speed. I've just recently bought a smartphone, kind of a poor person's Android, sorry to say, and then I won an iPad, and I'm trying to figure out how do I make all these devices interconnect and work for me. I've got a new printer, and I don't know how to set up the wireless portion on it, and I'm trying to figure out things like, can I download Outlook onto the smartphone? I know I can probably put it on to the iPad, but I don't know if I can put it on the smartphone.
You can't do it on either.
Oh.
Now,
unless she's asking about getting can I do an exchange server, which is maybe what she's talking about.
Did you say Outlook or Word?
Outlook.
Okay, yeah. You can connect to your Exchange server with both phones. Now, is your Exchange at an office situation? Is your email, you know if they use Exchange?
No, this is through my home.
Okay, well, the mail client on either phone will connect to your... There's a mail client built into the phone, and there's a mail client built into the iPad.
Okay.
And they will let you connect to your mail account as long as you have the settings, like the server names. And some of them, you know, they'll actually guess all the information based on your email address.
So I have my email account set up on my smartphone, but I'm wondering, can I download Outlook and have, like, the Outlook calendar contacts and all that other stuff that's in Outlook?
There is a... you can do it in an Exchange environment real easily when you're connecting to an Exchange server. It will pull all your contacts and stuff down. But because you're using it for personal email, all of your contacts and so forth are stored on your computer.
So the easy way to probably centralize that, since you started with Android, might be to look at kind of Google's suite of stuff. Because you can get your Google, you can get apps on your iPad that'll be Google apps that match what's on your Android. And if you keep your contacts, you know, you have to put your stuff into the Google sphere, but then it would be available on all your platforms, including your computer.
If you have a Gmail account, or if you get a Gmail account, you can, on your PC, you can have all your contacts pulled into Gmail, and then on your iPhone and your iPad. You can go into your mail accounts and set up your Gmail account, and then your smartphone and your iPad will pull access all the contacts from that Gmail account.
That's exactly the way I do. I have an Android phone, and I have an iPad, and I have a Gmail account. I do all of my calendaring, personal calendaring through Gmail. I have all my contacts stored in Gmail. So when I configure any of my devices to connect to my Gmail account, I get all of access to all of my email, all of my contacts, and my calendar.
Okay. Well, so
that's to me is a lot better. When I was first thinking about getting a smartphone or getting a phone, I always dreaded. You used to have to take all your contacts and stuff off the phone and move them to the new phone, and it was an involved and difficult process. Now using the cloud, as the kids are calling it, using Gmail. Now, if you have an email account that you like, that you're already using, say an AT&T account or a Yahoo account or something like that, you can make the transition to a Gmail account relatively painless because Gmail has the ability to connect to your other personal email accounts and pull the mail into that.
Oh, I didn't realize that because I have a Gmail account, and I also have another one that I've had for like 15 years, and I just like it. So I didn't know you could.
Yeah, well, you could actually have Gmail check the mail in the other account, and you can reply from Gmail with the address of that other account. So, but it has all of your mail goes to one repository, so you have access to it all. But you'll see whether it's a Gmail message or a message from one of your other accounts.
Okay, cool. Well, and so then my other question is sort of, you know, still trying to learn all these apps and everything. Other than listening to you guys, are there clubs, are there places to go where you can figure out how all these tools work and how to make them work better and interrelate and be more efficient?
Well, you know, that's a pretty broad question in terms of, you know, I want to make all this stuff do a bunch of things.
But the answer is no, all information flows through us.
You could come to the Geek Gathering on Friday.
Is a good place.
What's that?
Lifehacker.
Lifehacker.
That's a good site.
Yeah. But she's thinking about some physical location, I think. She's talking about like a HAL PC.
Well, I think if people, you know, we invite you to come to the Geek Gathering. I mean, it's a great place to come and network and meet some people. Whether or not somebody can sit down and have time to answer specific questions may be in doubt, but it might be a starting point.
You also said you have an iPad, right? You won an iPad or got an iPad?
Yeah, I've got
so
a new iPad. And
you can
I've
actually
been
set up time with Apple, at the Apple stores.
To speak like, to a genius.
And, right. And they will just kind of walk you through the basics of using it and what some apps are and what you can do with it and stuff like that.
Okay.
But the best option is if you know anybody personally,
right,
who has an iPad or an iPhone or uses a smartphone, to just have them kind of review with you what they're doing with it.
Okay. I mean, there's so many apps out there. I mean, every person you talk to is
doing something different.
Yeah, they're doing different things with their phones. So you're going to end up with somebody that says, well, these are the 10 or 20 apps I use all the time. And you'll talk to somebody else, and there may only be one or two that overlap. You know, sometimes none maybe, but usually there's going to be one or two that are going to be in most people's lists.
Well, I mean, like for the most part, a lot of the people that I know that use smartphones and iPads, the common denominators tend to be social media. They have Facebook, they have Twitter, they have all of that loaded, all their social media stuff on their portable device. But from there, it branches all over the place because I've got a friend of mine who's the sound man at the Continental Club. He is doing crazy and wonderful things with his iPad doing sound mixing. And he's gone down this rabbit hole, and he has come back with treasure in that area of using his device. I've talked to other people that, you know, really into using their devices for geocaching maybe or travel.
Games. Gaming is huge on the device.
Reading books.
So really it's a matter of thinking about things, and this is what I, you know, I guess we're struggling. I struggle with my wife and her iPad is that you have to think about what you want to do, and then you need to kind of do a little research to see if you can do it. So, say, you know, you're interested in maybe something to design patterns for quilts or something. You could go online just on a regular computer and Google iPad app quilting or iPad app whatever you're interested in and read online if there's even an app for that, which there probably is, and then what people say about it. Then you could go and get that app and put it on your iPad and see if you like it.
Cool. Totally
cool. So if you go with the idea of what do I think I can do with this device?
Right.
You know, so I say I'm interested in photography. So best photo app for the iPad, and you'll find all these websites that have reviews of the different apps for photography for the iPad, and then you could go get the one that you settle on and load it up and see if you like it.
Right. Oh, cool.
Hopefully that helps.
Those are great suggestions, all of them. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks for your call.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
I was doing a little looking up, and the term digital intimacy is far from original with me. There's a website, digitalintimacy.com. But also,
don't go to digitalintimacy.org.
No. Right. But the New York Times in 2008 used it in a headline, but later the writer, calls it ambient intimacy. Refers to it as, which is what I was describing, that feeling of being connected to somebody.
All right, I found this online today, and I wondered, I don't know why, it has to do with the digital intimacy.
You should go to the Christmas Islands digital intimacy website.
Well, speaking of digital intimacy, this is a thing I found. It's called the Dalek Relaxation Tape for Humans. So,
let's see. Been up to for the past few years.
Welcome to Dalek Relaxation for Humans. Take a deep breath in through your nose. Now exhale through your mouth, softly. Focus on slowing down your breathing into a calm rhythm. Inhale, you are becoming more and more calm. Exhale, you are feeling more and more relaxed. Inhale.
No, relax. I don't know. That was amusing. And I'm not even a Doctor Who fan. That was amusing. All right. Dead silence. Who's up next, Groovehouse? Exhale.
All right. Up next, we're going to take Maurice.
Maurice, you're on the air.
Marie?
Yes.
Hi, it's Marie.
Maureen?
Marie.
Marie, okay. You have it written down as Maurice. I apologize.
That's all right. I've been trying to update the Google Chrome because it's showing me that I need an update. Plus, I have an ad block, which is telling me I need
to... Yeah, you sent an email, and I replied to that, and I sent you a link for that.
Oh, you did?
I did.
Cool.
Well, basically...
I didn't see that.
Yeah, if you Google search, if you use the internet and use Google search to Google search Google Chrome Error 7,
yeah,
it will bring up, and I sent you this link, but there's a web page that talks about how to go through and solve that problem.
I did try that, though.
You
I
did?
You just
which, what did you
it
do?
Tell me
what you did.
Restart the computer and then come back on, get the task manager, and all the processes of, you know, the Google Chrome or Google updates, and then retry it. And I've still not had any luck doing that, though.
And you tried it off that link that I sent you?
No, not yet, because I didn't see it.
All right. So this talks about go to... let's see. Click Start menu and then Run, and then you need to... look for an application folder and delete it. There's several things that they're talking about doing more than just stopping that process. So,
all right.
But Google search that because it sounds like it's a common problem with Chrome and running the updates. And,
apparently,
Google support page has published what they believe to be the fix for that problem.
All right, cool.
All right. Thanks for your call tonight.
I had that happen to me.
You did?
It was, drove me nuts.
And what'd you do?
It was a while ago, and I think what I wound up having to do is uninstall Chrome and go in and find every vestige of it everywhere on my, it's on Windows.
Yeah.
Every vestige of it everywhere else, and then grab a fresh copy of, I was using the, I used the dev channel. I grabbed the beta channel, installed that, it quit doing it and let me update, and then I went back to the dev channel and it worked fine. But I had to really scrub it. That is a common problem, and it will drive you mad.
Mad, I tell you, mad! All right, Groove House.
Yes.
Mad! Who's up next?
Up next, we are going to take Nanny.
Nanny, you're on the air.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hey, what free antivirus software do you guys find dependable? My Norton is about to expire, and I keep telling them, remind me later, but I don't think I can keep doing that.
Right. Well, there's a number of free ones out there. One that we talk about or use quite often is one called AVG.
So is that still dependable and good?
Yes, it's working on my computer.
Groovehouse gives it the Groovehouse thumbs up. That's he believes right. in it. It's still they're still supporting it. They're still publishing updates. I'll say what I've said, in the past. No antivirus program that I have found blocks everything. It's really, it's good idea to run one. It's good idea to have one on your system, but it's also important to be careful how you use the internet.
Right.
So, if you get a link from somebody emails you a link, don't trust that they actually sent it to you. It could be something nefarious. So be careful what you click on. Be careful what you install. Be careful what you allow to run on your PC. Keep a good backup of all your data just in case.
Right.
And in the event that you do run afoul of some bad malware, you can always reload your system and recover from backup. But AVG is a fine antivirus. I would also recommend that if you tend to get infected with spyware, you might grab a copy of Malwarebytes to have on your system just in case you get, run up against something like that.
Okay. How does that spell?
Malwarebytes? Malwarebytes.
Oh, okay.
BYTES. It's linked on our webpage at geekradio.com under the Spywares link.
Okay.
But they offer a free version of their program. But AVG, Malwarebytes, those two generally tend to cover most of your bases.
So just go to AVG, ave.org?
Free.avg.com.
What is it?
Free.avg.com.
Oh, okay.
And they will offer you their paid version.
Well,
so be careful. You can get by. I think the free version is completely satisfactory for a single user. So if you want to get their free version, it's still AVG Antivirus Free 2012. And they offer it right there at free.avg.com.
Okay, good. Because I don't have the resources to pay everybody.
Right. Well, in this economy, if you can get it for free and it works, it's a good option.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right. Thanks for your call.
The other question I had for you.
Okay.
Oh, I thought you were gone. last week I had sent you, an email to your site, your website, not KPFT, but your site.
Uh-huh.
Asking if you have seen the video, it's a video that says, Dad, how do you like the iPod we got you?
Oh, yeah.
Wasn't that funny?
That was funny.
Very funny.
Yeah, the one where he's using it to dice his vegetables.
Yes.
Yes.
I fell on the floor laughing, so I thought you guys would love it.
That was hilarious.
Wasn't it?
Yes.
Good. I'm glad you got it.
All right. Thanks for sending that to us.
So yeah, he used it as a cutting board?
Well, there's this British sitcom, and there's a scene in there where the daughter asks her dad how he likes the new iPad she got him, and I didn't watch it all the way through, but he basically, as he's answering the question, he just goes to scrape the vegetables into the pot for the stew they're making, and he's using it as a cutting board, and then he wipes it off, and he runs it under the sink, and he puts it in the dishwasher and closes it up. It works great.
Awesome.
All right, 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with Technology Bites. Who's up next?
All right, up next, we are going to take Preston.
Preston, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hello, guys.
Hello.
I was calling about, I don't know if you guys saw Google Glass. The project that Google's starting on, the augmented reality glasses.
Yeah, Peter talked about it in detail on the news.
That's okay, you may have missed it. But yeah.
I missed it, yeah. What do you guys think that eventually we'll all have glasses on that act as our smartphones and we'll be able to access the interwebs through our eyes?
God, I hope not.
So you think that we're in, so if we end up all in the virtual reality, looking around, seeing things, we'll all become very unsocial and zombie-ish?
Any more so than we already are? Maybe not. You know, I think in a way, it's a logical transition from where people are right now, where they're, you know, walking around staring into their smartphone. I mean, I've seen
they just
that.
Won't have to be holding a device.
Right. What's going to happen is that the phone and the hand are just going to go away. They're still not going to be looking at you. They're going to be looking at something that's projected they'll on the inside of their eyeglasses.
Instead of the thousand yard stare, they'll just call it the Google stare.
The Google stare.
That's all I had.
All right. Thanks for your call. Yeah, I think it's, they're talking about, they have those displays or those, you know, where you can have like a tablet device that's like a piece of cellophane, you know, or a piece of, plastic, plastic.
Yeah, they're able to print. Digital print on plastics, yeah.
Yeah, so you basically could hand out flyers that you could, you know, even. Probably not that far away from where you could just update the information the Chronicle could give you a Chronicle paper thing you would buy, and then they could update your subscription to that, so you could be standing there with a piece of plastic that fits in your shirt pocket that you could pull out.
Just like in Minority Report.
Exactly.
Well, and eventually what will happen is we'll all have augmented brains, we'll be implanted with chips when we're born. Your smartphone will live with you, and you'll just ingest all this networked information all the time without any device or any dorky...
We just have heads-up display built into our sight.
Right. Maybe not even in sight.
Probably won't even use the optical cortex. It'll probably just be directly sent
like
to...
Like direct memories?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like Total Recall.
I know Kung Fu.
Sure.
I mean the definition of Kung Fu.
Well, you talk about, painful upgrades.
Error number 7. What does that mean?
Crap.
No, really, I'm literally crapping.
I'm literally urinating all over myself with this error 7. Yeah, Technology Bites is going to be a whole different show 50 years from now. Hold
it. Yeah, the curmudgeon will be calling about that his eyes don't work.
I took the red pill, and I just wondered if there's any way I could go back and take the blue pill.
For one thing, 50 years from now, they'll be all different hosts. So,
not necessarily. They could clone us. KPFT
and the big
been
difference will be
DNA
the ones
samples.
In the studio. The automated hosts in the studio, when they get all digital sounding, and they'll sound all digitized and stuttery just like I do.
Yeah. Right.
Pete is the future.
All right. Yeah, in some ways, I regret that I'm probably not going to see some of the coolest stuff to come, you know. But in other ways, I'm kind of getting tired. I'm like the curmudgeon.
I'm getting tired. This technology is overwhelming.
It's coming at such a rapid rate, and it's expensive. You know, it does come down in price as it comes, but it hits the market at a pretty high price point right now. So there's a lot of cool new tech, and it's changing so rapidly, and it's changing exponentially. It's not like, you know, you're going 2, 4, 6, 8, 10. You're going 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, 64. It just keeps getting faster and faster. I'm glad, you know, I'm glad that it, you know, I'm grateful for mortality because eventually I just won't be caring about the next
great thing. I wanted to get to the point where it could be like the character in one of the female characters in William Gibson's novels, right, where she's got like chrome lens implants over her eye sockets with heads-up display.
Yeah.
That would be cool.
That would just be a headache.
Because then I wouldn't have to cover my face because my eyes would be covered all the time.
Yeah, but you know what the sad part would be? You get those and they're cool for 2 years, and then the new ones come out with the blue or whatever, and you've got the obsolete ones already embedded in your skull.
Yeah, the upgrade, like I said, is really going to be painful.
No, the new ones are real retina display.
Now, the best possible option is to be able to take the core of your essence and put it into a machine for whatever. So, like, the next great, you know, bionic or...
Like Lawnmower Man?
Yeah.
Or exactly. Wally.
Or Wally.
Or Johnny Mnemonic.
Yeah, so you basically just... You have some kind of digital representation, you know, digital intimate.
Max Headroom.
Ghost in the Shell.
Like Max Headroom.
Was it Max Headroom still? He was implanted into the T, or his, yeah.
Yeah, something.
And he implanted into a Diet Coke commercial or something like that.
My Max.
I don't know. It's all just getting too weird. So. I just want to go fishing or something.
Do something analog.
Is that, you mean PH or F?
I was thinking we.
We fishing.
I call we fish.
Big bass tournament.
You know, even better are those fishing games that don't actually have to hook up to a console. It's just all self-contained digital fishing game. You see that one?
Right. Actually, I think Jay wants to retire to Animal Crossing. If any of you have played that, then he can fish and decorate his house and go see Tom Nook. If you're around kids under a certain age, everybody knows exactly what I'm talking about.
If I'm around kids... I mean, young age, you know exactly where I'm probably going to end up, beaten to death by some overprotective parent.
You're taking pictures of my kid?
Get away from here. No, wait, let me hold him up. Look at this. Take a picture of that. Ah. All right. Greenhouse, save me from myself.
Yes, I shall, and we will go to Ralph.
Ralph, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
You guys have been all over the place so many places and times that I had comments that I just can't get to fast enough. So I'll go back to what my original one was.
Probably a good plan.
I'm computer illiterate. Been listening to you guys so long that I know that Apple's the way to go. I got handed a case that's a Power Mac G4. I'm going to have to put a hard drive in it. I don't have a keyboard or anything else. What am I looking at generically to make this thing a functional unit in the house?
So you're looking at the same kind of work as if you bought a 1982 automobile and needed to get parts for it. You're going to have to look around a lot harder than you would think.
Okay, well, that's not bad because I drive the 1973 Volkswagen.
Well, not a Volkswagen, though. That's the one that's got, you know, 4 billion parts cars riding around. I'm talking about something on a regular car after a certain period of time, the parts supply.
A Fiat. Let's say a Fiat.
Let's just say that you've been given, you have not really been given anything.
Except the boat anchor.
Well, you've been given, you know, you've been given the idea of having a computer.
Okay.
And you think you're going to take that idea and cram it into this old G4 case and make it into something. And it's... Since you're computer illiterate, you would actually be wasting a large amount of learning effort on some very obsolete technology that would not benefit you.
The only thing I could suggest that you could do is you could take that computer with you. And, this is real. I'm not being sarcastic. You could take this computer with you and go to a hog meeting and look really sad. Now that this part's more joking.
Hog is
look
the really Houston area sad. Apple users
I'm
group.
I'm familiar with that one. You guys have taught me well.
All right. So Pete,
go to a hog meeting and look really, really sad, and probably somebody who knows all that stuff inside and out and has a box full of parts might have mercy on you and do it. I still would think that you're better off, if your time is worth $10 an hour, take $250 or $300 and go buy a netbook, because you're going to be better off than you would with that with the computer you've got.
Now, yeah, owning a Mac would be great, but owning an out-of-date Mac that you have to build from spare parts and from a junkyard is not going to be great.
That's cool.
And it's about four generations of processor out of date.
Okay, let's let it go. You guys already answered the question. Let's not beat this horse too much back. Have a good night. Thanks, guys.
All right, Ralph. Thanks for your call.
Bye.
Yeah, the big problem with that is going to be on a G4, Pete, what era, what's the technology for
Motorola?
For the hard drive.
The OS9.
Oh, for the hard drive.
You're probably SCSI.
SCSI.
You're lucky it's IDE, but it's probably SCSI.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, being handed a fully functioning G4 might be okay.
Particularly if the operating system.
If the operating system was there and you could boot it up and it actually worked. But unfortunately, everything that you're going to learn to do on it is not going to be applicable to the modern computer. So you're really kind of wasting that learn. If you're a true Luddite, if you're a true novice, you're going to waste a large amount of effort trying to learn the outdated technology when you'd be better off spending a few $100 getting a modern computer and learning that. So at least you kind of, you know, you're jumping in upstream a little bit.
I should have sold him my Newton.
Your Newton?
I missed an opportunity. Well, if he's got
you
that
don't want to sell your
great,
Newton, though. What I know about Peter Hughes does not want to sell his Newton.
That's true.
So, really, you know.
But I thought it would sound funnier if I was looking like I was opportunistically going to try and sell something that obsolete.
But we know you love your Newton. Yeah, I get why you said it, but we know you too well. You wouldn't sell your Newton. No, you keep your Newton. If I had a Newton, I'd keep it. But I don't have one because I sold it.
You could get one.
I could get one. Maybe Pete would sell you his. All right, Groomhouse.
Yes.
We have a weird batch of calls.
Okay.
Well, okay. No, I was just noticing on the leaderboard.
If you're on hold, please stay on hold. We don't want you to hang up.
On the leaderboard here, there's a call, and there's a blank spot, and then there's a call, and then there's a blank spot. So yeah. I guess some people hung up.
Yeah, or they just came in at different times.
We answered their question in the long,
what's
rambling
this comment documentary, The Light Bulb Conspiracy.
That was when the person was William was talking about.
I missed the comment.
Built-in obsolescence, and that's. Somebody called in.
And mentioned that there's a documentary out there about built-in obsolescence.
Well, I believe that I think going back to the obsolescence discussion, now there may be merit to the idea that technology is designed or released with the idea that you will have to replace it at some point because you can't buy parts for it or you can't find an operating system that supports it. But I can take an old 386 computer and load DOS on it, it will still work. You know, I could get an old Mac G4 and load, you know, the whatever version of the operating Mac OS on that, and it will work. I can't load the new stuff on it.
Although there are a lot of theories about, you know, things being designed to only last a certain amount of time. Like if they spend a little bit more money, or if they designed them a little bit differently,
they wouldn't break
4 to 5 times as long.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Okay. That's what the light bulb conspiracy is. Like the light bulb could probably burn for twice as many hours as it does, or even longer. Yeah, I understand that. Where stuff is designed to where it'll actually break, maybe. All right.
Yeah, but on the other side of the coin, to be real geeky, there's entropy. You know, stuff gets older and becomes obsolete, regardless of what you want to say. You know, people. Individual people wear out and they're gone.
Well, and plus the computer world, stuff's always advancing as far as the amount of memory and resources that are consumed to make things happen, because stuff's always being made bigger and better. And so at some point, your old stuff just can't handle, even if it still runs fine, it can't handle the stuff that is, you know, the current version of things, which is a little bit different than... You know, obsolescence.
I will confess,
that kind of obsolescence.
One of my pet peeves, though, is because of the column that I write for the Chronicle, seems to be have a very large faction of senior citizens that read it. I for some reason, they're the ones that seem to be most prone to conspiracy theories and about how, you know, corporations are evil and stuff. So they all, when I get an email that starts off with, I'm so mad at Microsoft, and then they spout some conspiracy theory about, you know, Microsoft's, you know, evil plan to replace the file menu system with the ribbon, you know, that kind of stuff. I lose patience with it. I just like, just tell me you have a problem. Let's solve the problem, but don't give me don't editorialize and theorize, you know, theorize about a conspiracy, because whether or not it's true, I personally have no patience for that. If that conspiracy is going on, we are, you know, there's nothing we can really do about it.
Just for fun now, every time somebody does that, recommend that they read The Singularity Is Near. Just because if they want to blow their minds, that would be a good one, especially if they believe everything they read. Actually, it's a good book to read anyway, but if you're already somebody who's already kind of half off the rails with conspiracy stuff about the ribbon, I think it would pretty well spin their head all the way around.
Just twist it right off like a bomb.
Just pop.
Like a Lone Star. Or recommend they watch...
Like a light bulb ahead of its time.
Or recommend they just watch the very last final series ending episode of Battlestar Galactica. That'll do it, too.
I can't even remember what that was like.
No spoilers.
All right, Greenhouse.
Yes.
Save us from ourselves.
I shall, by taking a call from Jimmy.
Jimmy, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
I have a question about iTunes and iPhone. Are you ready?
Yes, we're ready.
Cool. Okay, well, I've been using my iPhone and syncing it to my PC, and now I've got a 13-inch MacBook Pro. So took it in to the Mac store, and they set up the iCloud feature on it. And a couple of questions. The first one is, now my calendar on the phone has duplicates of everything, and I don't know how to get rid of that. I would like to continue to sync it to the PC that I'm still using as my desktop, as well as syncing it to my PowerBook.
You cannot sync these devices to two different iTunes. If you have an iPhone,
well, he may be the part of the laptop may be getting it all from the cloud. I will admit up front, I have not really gotten into the iCloud thing because I've got my stuff all kind of running smoothly without it. But I think on the calendar, you may want to look, and if in your calendar settings, like on your phone, look at the accounts. If there's two different accounts, then it may be that there's the calendar that was already sitting on your iPhone, and then the iCloud one is being treated as a second calendar that's separate, so that then, you know, grandpa's birthday shows up twice because it's in the one calendar, it's in both calendars. And in that case, I would say get rid of the local one and use the cloud one, because that's going to be the one that syncs up across your devices.
Yeah, there could probably be some weird things happen because if your PC is pushing to the cloud.
Well, no, I don't. Well, I don't think it is. I don't know. I mean, I run it on a wireless network, but.
Or if you're synchronizing between your computer and the cloud, and at some point everything either from your phone or from your PC went into the cloud, then at that point you could be getting a source from the cloud and a source from the PC.
All right, right.
So your smartphone ends up with two.
That's what we're. Because what he has is you have the computer with iTunes, and then you had your iPhone synced up with the cloud. So
I originally had it, you know, before the cloud, and I'm with what one of you guys was saying. I'm not so sure I'm down with the cloud.
Honestly. Yeah,
but they kind of sold me on it, and now I have it, and now I've got two things on my calendar.
I'm cloud.
What I was doing, which was working fine with the PC, was just, you know, plugging it into sync, syncing my calendar and on my PC, which is still my main computer, and I was also syncing my iTunes on my PC. If I can have the same calendar on all three devices without duplicates, that's what I want.
Well, that's where the cloud comes.
And I don't know that I need the cloud. Maybe I should get rid of the cloud.
Well, no, that's where the cloud would come in, is because I have not used, and unlike Pete, I haven't used the cloud yet for the calendar. I mean, my backups on my iPad happen to the cloud where my photos and stuff like that are uploaded.
Mm-hmm.
But all of my calendaring comes, again, this goes back to the conversation we were having earlier. All of my calendaring is done in Gmail. So I get all of my calendar contacts and stuff from my Gmail account.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not, and then it publishes that to my iPad calendar. It publishes it to my Android calendar. And I have it on all of my devices.
See, my phone's actually fed from my computer and from iCloud and from Gmail and from Exchange.
Yeah, okay. Sure. Well, this is starting to look like what my situation is, because it's Outlook is what I'm using on the PC.
Mm-hmm.
And naturally iCalendar on the Mac, okay? So I guess what you're saying is, if I got the cloud to work correctly and somehow eliminated the duplicates, well, here's my question about that. Is the cloud is compatible with PC? I mean, if I have my PC on a wireless network?
Your PC doesn't have to be on a wireless network. It just has to be connected to the Internet.
Okay. Well, that's true. Wi-Fi or Internet, yeah.
Yeah.
Or a wired network.
Yeah. You can also download to the PC iCloud control panel module that will let you control what comes off of the PC in terms of iCloud. And that may give you more control to help prevent that.
So back to how to get rid of the duplicates.
Well, not knowing the exact configuration that you have, we can't give you specifics, but we've given you various things to try.
One thing you might do is, if you go to whatever the website is for Apple's cloud and log in through the web interface, and then go into the calendar, it'll show you what's currently in the cloud, and you can see if there's actually two copies
in the cloud,
in the
calendar.
Cloud calendar.
Right, that's a good point.
That'll give you one point where you can at least figure out if there's two copies in the cloud or not. And
if you have two copies in the cloud, then you're going to have to deal with your duplicate entries a different way than if you're getting one entry from the cloud and one entry from Outlook or from your PC.
I'll definitely try that. And it looks like on the iCal, on my Mac, on the iCalendar, I don't think the duplicates are there. But they're on the phone. So, I don't know.
And if you do put together some Google searches, iPhone, duplicate calendar, you'll start to find some discussions in there. So I did that, and there's a number like where people are talking about duplicate iCal entries in iPhone after iCloud sync. There's a whole discussion forum where this guy's got the problem and people are offering solutions. So attack it that way. Find somebody who's discussing the problem and it's similar to the way that you're having it and see what they suggest. And, you know, if it makes sense, maybe you go down that path.
I will definitely do that. You guys are actually the first place I brought this question to. And I also have, if you will allow me, an iTunes question.
Okay.
Okay. All of the stuff that I have on my iPhone, all of the music on my iPhone, came from my CD collection that I had just, you know, put on my PC and automatically went into iTunes. And whenever I plugged in my iPhone, it just automatically went onto the iPhone. So I've got a piece of my music collection there. And then when I bought... When the Apple Store people did the data transfer on my new MacBook, they took media files from a different computer, which was my mobile my netbook, which was the one I would take on the road with me at the time. That's what this is a replacement for. So now I've got two different iTunes, and they told me, I guess this is an anti-piracy feature or something, that I cannot get the music off of my iPhone onto my new Mac.
That's mostly true. The thing I would say is, since you digitized all that stuff on the other computer,
right,
get a hook up the Mac on the same network with your PC, or get get a USB flash, thumb drive, and copy all those files, copy that iTunes library on your PC to however you want to do it, and then take it over to the Mac. plug it in and go to iTunes and tell it to import and point it to that folder, and it'll drag in all that music, because there's no protection on the stuff that you, there shouldn't be any on the stuff that you, you know, digitized yourself on your PC.
Right, they were my CDs.
Now, let me ask you this.
That sounds like a perfect solution.
Do you have all of the music files actually on your computers? Or are there any music files that only exist on the iPod or the iPhone?
No, everything that's on the iPhone is on the PC.
Okay, so
yeah, what Peter said is probably the easiest way to do it. There is software you can get. I assume you still can get it. I used to be able to get, like, called iPod Rip or something that will actually pull files off the iPod onto a computer.
Right. There are a number of softwares that'll do that.
Want you to do that, but there are softwares that will allow that.
Yeah.
And to be quite honest, it's more work to do that than it is to copy the files.
Yeah, but if you have access to the computer, it's easier just to copy the files over to the other computer and
import. Right. I mean, I took all the music files that I had from I had an iPod crash, and my entire music library was on the iPod, plus I had it on another computer. I was able to just take all those song files and take them all and put them into my music folder on my PC, and then I had iTunes just go through and get all those files and synced it right to my new device.
Great.
Yep.
Great. Okay, well, I should be able to just transfer it from one computer to the other. It just doesn't like transferring it from the iPhone.
Right, getting it from the iPhone to the computer, you have to get a third-party piece of software to do it, so it's a problem.
Right.
All right.
Just transferring with a thumb drive sounds great. Okay.
All right.
That helps. Thanks a lot.
All right, thanks for your call.
Great. Bye.
All right, we are probably...
Say it loud. I'm cloud and I'm proud. James Brown.
Thus ends our broadcast day. All right, we are in speed round, I think.
Yeah, we're getting close to it.
Groovehouse is always tempers my... urgency with
he's just
Carl.
Kind of contrary to what you say.
Yeah, I know. He's a curmudgeon.
Not really. I mean, you know.
Groovehouse has been standing up to me more lately. I think it's time for him to,
you going to put me back out in the lobby? You take me down a peg?
You know, I had not even thought of that, but that is a good idea. It's time to put Groovehouse in a timeout.
Well, we can put it to move a the vote to the listeners.
You know, a long time ago... Groovehouse answered the phone out in the lobby, so he wasn't actually part of the show, you know, on air, and there was a kind of a separation there. And then Groovehouse came in and started answering the phones right here inside of the studio, and it became a part of the show, just gradually kind of wormed his way in. And
I came in.
But he was very respectful and deferential for years. But here lately, in the last couple of, like, 6 months or so, he's been kind of, like, getting a little prickly, with an emphasis on the first part before the lead. So I respect that, but sometimes I feel the urge to, you know, I feel like there's a need to, you know, the back of my hand.
is there?
Might have been around the time he cut his hair.
Just Whole Foods snacks.
Well, hey, Groovehouse, shut up and drink your wheatgrass. Who's the... okay. No, but seriously, my friend Groovehouse.
Prickly. Yes, Prickly.
That's Jay Lee.
Oh, sorry.
you're thinking of the other guy.
Oh, okay, Prickly. That's right. That's someone
Prickly,
else.
The prickiest that's someone
else. Amazingly, right? They look exactly alike.
And I forget that Flickton's an instigator. He's a fickle man.
Yeah, you can't hear what he says behind this glass.
I can't. Lowers the mic. Yeah. Can you believe what Jay just did? Let me tell you why that's funny. All right.
Now we're in the speed round.
Thanks to your prattling. All right.
And in the speed round, first round, we're going to take Mark.
Mark, we're terribly sorry. You're on the air.
No problem. Long time listener, first time caller, long time curmudgeon.
All right, curmudgeons.
Curmudgeon night.
All right. So I like to make mixtapes, put on CDR.
Okay.
And I've been using Windows Media Player, and I've had no problem burning the CDs until recently. I put the CD in, and it acts like it's burning, but it burns real quick. and then it spits out a blank disk.
So you, it looks like it's recording your music to the disk, and then it does it faster than what you would expect, and then you get nothing on the disk.
Does it burn a coaster, or does it still see it as a blank CD?
I believe it's a blank CD.
So you can reuse it.
So you can put it back in.
I stick it in a CD player, and I get nothing out of it.
But would it let you, can you, have you tried putting it back in and reburning it, and it lets you reburn it again?
No.
But it keeps doing the same thing.
I mean, I have tried it, and no.
It won't let you reburn.
So well, it would do the same thing.
Okay. My troubleshooting would be, one, try a different piece of software and see if it does the same thing.
Well, I just tried it with Real Player, and it works fine.
So it sounds like it's Windows Media Player. Can you uninstall and reinstall Windows Media Player? I haven't used a PC in a long time.
Do you know what version of Windows Media Player this is?
No, I don't.
If it's not the latest version, are you using Windows XP or Windows 7?
Windows 7.
It probably is going to be the latest version, because I don't think they've updated it since then.
Now, what you're burning to the disk, is it possible that maybe they're not actual music files that you're trying to burn to. Maybe it's some kind of link. What program are you using to burn the music?
Windows Media Player.
Windows Media Player. And when you play the song in Windows Media Player, it actually plays, right?
Yes. But then when I eject the disk, it keeps playing.
Yeah, because it's playing the file locally. It's not playing the song off the CD. It's not actually putting the song on the CD.
Right, although it says it is.
It thinks it's doing something, so it's almost as if it's not looking in the right space for the files to put the music onto the CD. Huh.
Right, but this is the same method I was using before, and I was getting discs out of it, and now I'm not.
And I assume, how long has this been going on?
We'll say about 2 weeks.
About 2 weeks. So you've rebooted since that's happened and so forth. But you didn't move your music library to another folder or anything like that?
Nope, I didn't do anything different.
See, I would say, because, I mean, sometimes CD burners go bad, but he said he used a different piece of software and he was able to successfully burn a CD.
It's like Windows Media Player is having the problem.
That's what it seems like.
It's like Windows Media Player is looking at the data and writing it to the disk in the wrong format or... not as an actual music disc, so you're actually trying to make playable CDs, not like a CD full of MP3s, right?
Right.
Yeah.
No, I'm a curmudgeon. I do the CDs.
I would, if you can uninstall Windows Media Player, and I'm not sure you can, I would try that and then see if you can get the latest version and reinstall it. That would be the thing I'd start with.
Something else to try just to see if it's...
If I did that, would I lose all my music files?
No.
In fact, another thing to try would be, do you have more than one person using this computer?
Nope.
You could try just creating another user profile on the computer and logging into that user profile and then trying to use Windows Media Player while you're logged into that profile and see if it then burns the CD properly. If it does, then it just tells you that you've got a problem under your current user profile with the way that Windows Media Player is configured or something wrong with your profile.
But if I log into another profile, I won't have access to...
This is just for experimenting.
Yeah, just copy some of your
songs over to the
flash
new profile.
Drive or something or into the new account. So that you have some available.
Right. This is just for testing purposes.
Okay.
Just to see. Because that'll tell you if it's a problem with the CD or if it's a problem with your user profile or if it's a problem with Windows Media Player or whatever. It'll give you something to go on. Unfortunately, we don't have time to solve the problem all in one fell swoop, but it'll give you something to try.
All right.
All right?
Thank you.
Thanks for your call. All right. Well, unfortunately, we're out of time.
Although if you're a real curmudgeon, you should transfer all your music to wax cylinders, I think.
Edison cylinders.
And there's software for that.
My friend just posted and he commented on me. He just loaded up the
Air Display
and is running off his MacBook Pro and showing his display.
Is that Parallels that he's running on the other? That's what it looks like in that Outlook?
It's some kind of calendar, but it doesn't look like Outlook.
Maybe iCal.
Yeah. All right, well, listen, we're out of time. But we have a geek gathering this Friday. If you want to, if you're a true curmudgeon, you'll come out to the geek gathering on Friday. Information about the geek gathering is on our website at geekradio.com. And really, if you want to come out, come out. We have a, it's very casual. There's no judgments.
No groove house.
Never is. I don't even think you maybe this time. Did you maybe this time?
I think I maybed.
You might have maybed. Maybe I maybed.
Maybe I maybed.
Well, so no Barrett either, but it's going to be Afflicted, Dwight, myself, plus
the spirit of Groove House.
A handful of great people, you know, that come out every time, and then who knows who else will show up. But you're welcome to come out and hang out with us at the Technology Bites Geek Gathering this Friday at Coffee Grounds. Otherwise, we'll see you next Wednesday night for more Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Afflicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's
Groove House.
Actually, Barrett's not here, but we wish he was.
Yes, we do.
All right. Stick around for, if you're listening in Houston, Texas, Vegan World Radio coming up next. Otherwise, check your local listings, and we'll see you next time.
Hathgar, host of the syndicated news program Uprising, and I'll be in Houston on Friday, April 13th, speaking at St. Paul's Methodist Church at 5501 South Main Street at 7 p.m. I'll be addressing topics of social justice, citizen journalism, and the budding human spring, the story of the phenomenal protest around the world, from the global Occupy movement to European austerity demonstrations to the regime-changing Arab Spring. You can also attend a meet-and-greet with me, also at St. Paul's Methodist at 6 p.m. Advance ticket purchases can be made online at kpft.org, and all proceeds go to award-winning listener-sponsored KPFT Radio. This is Sonali Kohatkar, and again, I'll be in Houston speaking on Friday, April 13th at 7 p.m. at St. Paul's Methodist Church, 5501 South Main Street. This is KPFT Radio 90.1 FM, Houston, Galveston, Goodrich, Huntsville, and the world.
On May 4th, there will be a benefit concert for breast cancer survivors. Latin pop folk band Barrandua and other Latin composers, singers, songwriters will perform to raise funds for Pink Pilates, a nonprofit group which helps breast cancer survivors with their physical, emotional, and nutritional needs. Casa Argentina, along with the University of St. Thomas, will host the event at that university's Jones Hall on May 4th at 8 p.m. The Night of Artists, including Martin Blito and Jay Simon, will perform original music and some of the greatest songs from Latin folk icon Mercedes Sosa and Facundo Cabral, both who passed recently, but whose music and poetry live on. For tickets, go to CasaArgentina.org. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston, KPFT.org.